Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. That's great. Thank you very much for that really fine introduction. I didn't really recognise myself there, but some of it's true. Okay. Put this down here. Right. Well, I'm really, really pleased to be here. Thank you to the organising committee for the invitation. And this is probably my 20th visit to Taiwan, I think. I've been coming here for 14 years regularly. But it's my first visit to Tainan, and I'm very, very pleased to be here. And it's my wife's first visit to Taiwan as well. So a few firsts. I'm just going to keep an eye on the time so that I don't keep you here too long. Although one of my helpers will say 5 minutes up when it's time to go, I'm sure. And there are so many people I'd like to thank, but I'd especially like to thank my student helper, Tang Yu, who's been very good at looking after me. I don't know where she is now. And my former PhD student, Su Pei Ye, who I see at the back there, who's been looking after my wife as well. But I'd like to thank everybody for coming here this morning at 9 o'clock when it's raining. That's very good. I'm not sure I would come here at 9 o'clock to listen to me, but you've come to listen to me, which is very nice. So I was trying to practice hello in different languages, but I'm not very sure. Ni hao to people who speak Chinese. Konnichiwa, people who speak Japanese. Merhaba to the Turkish people, I think that's right. Or marhaba, yeah, there we go, thank you. And to the Australians, g'day. Right. Okay, so I was asked to talk about nursing informatics for education. But I thought, first of all, just before we get there, I'd tell you a little bit more about myself and where I come from. Probably people who are not familiar with the UK or the northern that part of the Northern Hemisphere probably wonder where Hull is. And I know that in this part of the world, you also find Hull very difficult to pronounce because of the two L's in it. Anyway, that's the world, as you probably know. And I can see it on here. And that's the UK, and the arrow is more or less pointing to where we live in Hull. And of course, there's Taiwan. So it's a long way away. As I've been here many, many times, but it's always a pleasure to come back again. And that's the UK, and specifically there is Hull. It's called Kingston upon Hull because it's the city is actually Kingston, and it's on the River Hull. But the River Hull is a very small river, and the one that you'll see in a minute is much bigger. I was born actually in this part up here in Scotland, so I'm Scottish, and my wife comes from this bit here, which is Wales, so we're not really English at all. And it might explain why my accent is a little bit different to some of the accents you might have heard, and I hope you can understand what I'm saying. One word that people find very difficult in my Scottish accent is the word nursing. That means nursing, N-U-R-S-I-N-G. So when you're nursing, I'm not saying Russian noshing, but it's nursing, okay? And that's the only chance that you're going to get to rehearse that one. And I noticed yesterday when AFAP was speaking, a lot of people were taking photographs of the slides, despite the rules about taking photographs. I don't mind at all, but if people do want a copy of the slides, there's a couple of ways that you can get them. You can go to my university webpage, I'm very easy to find on Google, and go to SlideShare, and you can download the slides from there. Alternatively, on the last slide, my email is there, you can email me, and I'll send them to you if you want them. So what else can I tell you about Hull? That's a sort of picture of the city. I don't know if that's... it's quite a small city. It's not very big, about 250,000 population, which is very small. And the structure in the foreground... Oh, I'm going to go the wrong way. The structure in the foreground there is the football stadium for Hull City Football Club, also known as the Tigers. And we're top of our league at the moment. Unfortunately, it's the second league, so it's not the first league. And thank you very much. And this river is the River Humber, not the Hull. That's the big river that you see outside of the city. And that's not a very flattering picture of the city, but just so that you maybe know, Smith & Nephew, the pharmaceutical and surgical dressing company, have their headquarters in our city, which is quite a claim. And I know I've seen Smith & Nephew dressings being used all over the world, so it's one claim to fame apart from our football team and me for Hull. And this is very close to where I live. That's not my house, but I live just round the corner from there in Hull. There's some very beautiful parts to Hull. This is taken in spring, and you can see one typically British thing there, a red post box, and a typically Hull thing, which is a white telephone box. Hull is unique. It has its own telephone system, completely separate from the rest of the country. You can phone in. There is a wire that connects us to the rest of the country, but it's a completely separate telephone system which evolved somehow. And this is my family, my children, all eight of them. And at least one other person in the room, two other people in the room know all the names, my wife and Sue Pei, my PhD student. And four boys and four girls. I just thought it would be nice to show you them. But there's a particularly interesting aspect of this picture. The oldest girl on the right, 31 years old, Hannah, today celebrates 10 years as a registered nurse. So she followed me into the profession. So she'll be very glad that I mentioned her here. She's a critical care specialist, and she's just coming to the end of her advanced nurse practice. So I'm proud of them all, but I'm very proud that Hannah followed me into the profession. And also Lucy, she's also a nurse, and she's a captain in the British Army. None of the boys have followed me in yet, and I don't think they're going to. And that's the youngest. Our youngest one is 17 years old. That's Rebecca. And that's Christmas Day. That's why all the food's there. Right. Other claims to fame from Hull. This is called the Deep. It's supposed to be the biggest aquarium in the world. Actually, that isn't true, I don't think, but we say it's the biggest one in the world. It's actually under the sea, and we've got sharks in it. So if you come to Hull, you can come and visit our big aquarium. That's the Humber Bridge, which joins Lincolnshire to Yorkshire. And that was the longest suspension bridge in the world until they built a bridge between Lantau and Kowloon in Hong Kong. Right, so moving on. That's the University of Hull in winter. This is the sign just outside where my faculty is. And I'll get on to informatics in a minute, don't worry. But I just thought, I know that, again, I've often been asked about the symbols of the university which appear there, but this is them outside our gate. And the symbol, this symbol here is the flame of truth or the flame of knowledge. This symbol here is the Rose of Yorkshire, which shows that we're situated in Yorkshire. That's a crown, the royal crown, showing that we're a chartered university. It's about 60 or 70 years old, the university. That's the fleur-de-lis of Lincolnshire, which is on the other side of the river, because we look after that area too. We used to be the only university, but now there are a couple of universities. And that there is often described, that's there, as the dove of peace. I suppose it is, but it's actually the symbol of the family who gave the money to found the University of Hull many years ago, the Ferns family. Right, so let's get on to informatics. I asked one of my colleagues, Dr. David Barrett, my very sort of very distinguished and handsome-looking colleague, who does this kind of thing in our university. I said, "What do we do by way of informatics at Hull?" Because I'm not really an expert in informatics. And he says, "We don't do anything in pure nursing informatics. The pre-reg nurses get some insight on electronic patient records, mainly from usage perspective, and he does something with them in telehealth in year two, but that's about it." And when I was looking around to sort of find out a little bit more about informatics, I get the impression that it's very much a sort of North American phenomenon. It's not something that we really talk about a great deal in the UK. We do things that would constitute informatics, but we don't really teach it as a subject, which I think is interesting. But I've met it here, I've met it in the Middle East, and I've met it in the places around the world where there's much more, I think, of a North American influence. And just in case you're wondering if I've ever made any contribution to the field, I have made one contribution in the International Journal of Medical Informatics on the use of computerized information systems in a Spanish hospital with one of my former PhD students who glorifies in the name of Cristina Orovio Goicoechea. But that's my one foray into the world of nursing informatics. But as I say, looking across the world, I get the impression that it's a very North American phenomenon, the word in any case. So what is informatics? Well, I get all my information from Wikipedia. I don't know about you. I was described in the Netherlands last week when I was at a conference as a 60-year-old digital native. I tend to use a lot of social media, and I use things like Wikipedia to get information, and I think there's nothing wrong with it. And I'll come back to Wikipedia later, but Wikipedia says that informatics is the science of computer information systems. You can read the rest of it, but it's about the interaction with humans and information alongside organisations and technology and system. The word system is used. It's not a grammatical error. It's a word that's used in informatics. So it's about joining together people, information, and doing something with it that's useful. And nursing informatics, of course, will be working within that milieu in nursing. So informatics is the science and art of turning data into information, taking raw data and making it useful and usable. And this is something, of course, that we all do to some extent every day, but informatics is the study of trying to do this better and trying to make it even more useful. So if you look at a word cloud around informatics, you find people, data, system, the words. There's lots of other words, but you know, it's people, data, and system always come together. So data for people and related to different systems within nursing and within healthcare. So just, this doesn't work every time. Okay. So bringing people, data, and systems together is the subject of informatics. Before I go any further, I'm not very good with this. That's called a Venn diagram. You probably knew that. And I just took a note here to say that Venn came from Hull, my hometown. He was a statistician, and we have a building in the university called the Venn Building. So another claim to fame of Hull. So it's about data and information and transforming that into knowledge. So just trying to conceptualise what informatics really is, because it's a very big area, it's quite a vague area. I think that's about as much as we can narrow it down to try and describe it properly. But I will come back later to look at some aspects of informatics and what we actually teach students and what constitutes informatics. And as you'll see, it is quite big. So really, it's about taking data, which is raw information, the sorts of things that we collect daily on clinical practice, turning that into information, synthesizing it in some way, and then making it useful for knowledge, something that persists and goes beyond the actual collection of the data. And some of the sort of examples of information that's sort of collected routinely, certainly in the UK, and would be used for what we now know to be informatics, are data, for example, on pressure ulcers. Pressure ulcers are seen as being a very nurse-sensitive outcome. One of the things that, if you get it right, pressure sores shouldn't occur or should be minimised. In fact, if you look at the research, this has nothing to do with informatics, but if you do look at the research on nurse-sensitive outcomes, pressure sores actually aren't all that sensitive pressure sore prevalence isn't actually all that sensitive to the level of nursing care. The thing that's most sensitive to the levels of nursing care is patient survival after surgery. But nevertheless, we do collect data routinely on pressure sores. So we report the data at the ward level. It's collated at the hospital level, and then it's used by the National Health Service, certainly in my country, to try to learn how to do things better. And I think that's another sort of summary of informatics, reporting, collating, and then using it to learn and to make things better, or to study to see if they're getting worse. And we do a lot of this in the UK. We call it clinical audit. We probably do the same thing here, possibly call it something else. The other sort of things, other sort of data that we collect routinely that is used in this way is drug errors as well. We should be collecting information on drug errors. They should be reported at the ward level. They should be synthesised together to see what's causing them, other patterns across the hospital, and then used to learn so that the system learns in future how possibly to avoid these or to create the system in such a way that you can minimise them or train people to make fewer errors. So, that's the sort of That's informatics, I think. Just information that's useful. Excuse me. Right. Okay, so let's get on to informatics for nursing education. I think the things that we've got to realise now are a couple of things, really. Where do our students get information? And also, where do we get our information? I'll come back to that in just a few minutes. But also, I think we've also got to realise where our patients get information as well. And this is the Health on the Net survey. It's 2005. It's a little bit old, but it's the only one I could find with a diagram. But asking patients how frequently they seek information from medical health sites, medical websites intended for professionals like us. It's not a fantastic piece of research, but very frequently. So patients are using the information that we put out there for our own consumption, for their consumption, to learn about whatever conditions they've got. And so they're using our websites. So I think it makes it important for us to remember that and to make the information as good as possible. And also to teach our students that people often come into medical and nursing care with a high level of knowledge already of their condition. So informatics is spreading way beyond nursing and nursing education. And I'm sure you've got similar sites to this in your own countries, but in the UK, and it's well worth having a look at this site, the NHS Choices website is one such site that patients use a great deal. It's actually designed for patients by professionals, but it's a very good use of information. So if you're going to hospital for an investigation, or you've been to the doctor and he suspects that you've got something wrong with you, NHS Choices is a very specific website where you can get information. You can watch YouTube videos of people who've had the condition, how they've managed it. Really excellent bit of informatics, a really excellent resource. And, of course, it's a very good teaching tool as well. I think it's if students come to ask me about some things I don't really know much about, multiple sclerosis or something like that, just as an example, I say, well, have a look at NHS Choices and look there. You should know as much as the patients who are coming into your care. So just as an aside, patients are using the information that we put up there. But, of course, what do students actually use? And somebody said this at the opening ceremony. People are not using books anymore. I haven't visited your library here, but the library at the University of Hull has just been refurbished, a multi-million pound project. And really, it's very difficult now to find a book in the library. And whenever I get books to review, and I don't really want them, or I've already got a copy, I used to sign them and send them over to the library as a donation. The last time I sent a pile of books over to the library, they came back to me and said, we no longer take books. So we've got to appreciate, very sad in a way, but we've got to appreciate, when our students go to the, or when our students, I can't assume yours do, but when our students go to the library, they mostly go for coffee and then to sit at a terminal or to plug into the Wi-Fi system with their iPhones or their tablets or whatever. So, students are using, as a major source of information, Google. And so they should be, because everything's out there on Google. That's where I get most of my information. Some of them, perhaps, and I hope, would be using Google Scholar as well, which is slightly more academic. You have to appreciate with Google Scholar, of course, it's highly sensitive but not very specific. So anything on a topic will be there, whether the journal's a good one or not. What I'm trying to say is that students use these things. We can't stop them using them, but we've got to try and teach students to use them properly and to somehow evaluate the information these things contain. And, of course, they use, Wikipedia as well. And I really think in terms of teaching students about using the net, there's a lot of my colleagues tell students not to use Wikipedia. They mustn't use it. And I often get criticised or have perplexed students saying to me, but I've been told not to use Wikipedia. But Wikipedia is an excellent source of information. You've just got to be able to evaluate it. Don't put Wikipedia as your reference in your reference list, but Wikipedia usually contains references to other materials. So I think we've got to sort of go along with this. We can't stop it. And I think the main thing is to try and help students to evaluate the information and use it properly. However, that's all very much what's called Web 1 level of use. People still using this sort of information. That's how computer printouts used to look like when I was a lad before we had screens and such like. But this is all very much sort of Web 1. What's actually happening these days is students have moved on a bit, and so have we, and we've really got to try and move along with them and understand it. So that sort of web one is really somebody putting information up on the web and somebody else taking it down. And sometimes it might go back the way again, if somebody asks a question or whatever. But it's fairly one-way traffic and very slow. And I think email as well would be considered to be web one level of usage. And it's interesting to note that many universities, certainly in North America, no longer give their students email accounts because they know that they won't use them. They use other means of communication. So the student body's moved on and rather away from email. If I say to my 17-year-old daughter, email me it, she looks at me as if I'm mad. She says, what? We don't use email. Okay, but it's a bit of an effort. But what students are doing now, what we're doing now, is what's called Web 2, basically using social media, so that people are not interacting particularly directly. They can interact directly, but what's happening is that information is going up there all the time from all sorts of sources, some of it good, some of it bad. Again, I keep saying the thing, we've got to be able to teach our students to know what's good and to know what's bad, and there are ways of sort of doing that. But what people are doing more often than interacting with each other, they're actually interacting with the information, through social media sites. They're not usually reacting with each other. And I think we have to learn to participate in this, because this is, if you like, the new informatics. This is where students are finding their information. And, of course, what do our students do with the information? Well, they social network. They share the information. They put it out there. They're interacting, and they're also creating their own information. Every time somebody picks up a piece of information and puts it out onto the internet, they're actually adding to that. They're creating that. And, again, just as an aside, journals like my own, I edit the Journal of Advanced Nursing, we're actually beginning to look at the alt metrics, the number of times things are mentioned on Twitter, Facebook, and on blogs. So, we're beginning to count that as a way of picking up information. But back to the students in informatics. I don't know if anybody here has ever taken part in a Twitter chat. I've taken part in a few, but at two ends of the spectrum. I took part in a Twitter chat with the Nursing Times, which is a sort of professional magazine in the UK, and I also took part in one with the Lancet, which was mentioned several times by Ataf yesterday, one of the leading world medical journals. And I have to say that both of them were interesting, both of them were very good, but the one with the Nursing Times, which was aimed at students, was by far the busiest and by far the liveliest and by far the most interesting. You set these things up and students are, just struck me just how good our students are at using these things and typing quickly and getting messages up there and adding to what's going on and adding to the debate. So our students share the information and they share it in various ways. They share it by Twitter, although Twitter's probably, I think it's very popular. It's possibly more for the slightly older generation now, but I still think it's very, very important. They use Facebook. Sometimes they use email. As I say, very rarely do they use email these days. And I think we've got to appreciate that as well. Emailing a group of students about something these days is pretty hopeless, because you know that half of them will never actually log in and read it. Put it out on the Twitter site for the department and they'll mostly get it. Blogs, we'll come back to those. And, of course, the even Snapchat as well. I haven't a clue how to use Snapchat. I've got it on my phone. My daughter won't show me how to use it in case I do something embarrassing. But I do know that it's used. I've been interviewed on Snapchat after a conference. You know, the sound bites being sent out time and again. So this is where our students are. You know, they're not interested in logging into massive databases and into computers and things like that anymore. They're dealing with information in a much more lively way. And I forgot to mention a very important site here as well, which is YouTube, and that's another huge social networking site and a huge source of very, very good information. I was astonished to learn recently that every day a certain amount of footage goes up on YouTube. Every day, 100 years' worth of information goes on YouTube. That's the times of information that goes up. It's absolutely staggering. So every day, another 100 years of information goes up. It's just phenomenal. And the speed with which you can do it is incredible. I filmed Afaf Malise dancing last night, and that was on Twitter by the time I'd finished that was out on YouTube by the time I'd finished my glass of wine, and she picked it up on her phone and liked it and texted me back and said she liked it. It's very quick. However, I think many of us probably feel a little bit like this. As older academics, we don't get social media. But I'm afraid to say it doesn't matter whether you get it or not, it's happening. And, we've really got to, I don't want to sound like an ageing hippie, we've really got to get with it, we've really got to try and understand it. Again, I'm repeating myself a bit here, but this is what our students are using. This is where they are. And there's a myriad of different social networking sites, of course, but there are some key ones like Twitter and Facebook and blogging and such like. So it's out there, and we've got to be very careful about information overload. I think we've also got to, we've also got to ration ourselves in terms of using these things, and we've also got to teach our students good practices, in terms of the internet. There's a life away from the internet, even though we want them to be using this to find information and contribute to it. We've got to teach them that not to spend their whole life on it. That is a tendency, and I'm a very bad example from that point of view. So, just excuse me just a second. So, sort of defined informatics, looked at where the sort of examples of where it's being used, and looked at the sort of ways in which our students are using online information. Therefore, how do we teach our students about informatics? As I say, we don't formally teach a program on informatics at my university, but we do make a great deal of use of online material and e-learning and such like, and I do as well. And so we need to move with that. I think if we teach informatics like this, like I'm doing now, I mean, this is the worst possible way to teach anybody, standing in front, flashing up PowerPoints in a way. You can stand it every now and again, but if students are coming in every day to learn about informatics, I think we just do the old-fashioned type of teaching, thinking I'm teaching just by dispensing water over them like that, it really won't work. Students just don't want to be taught like that anymore, I don't think. And not just in my country. One of your colleagues said that in the opening ceremony here in Taiwan. Students are much more interested in different ways of learning. So I think to teach informatics, we've also got to move and teach it in a way that is in line with informatics and not teach it like a dry, dull subject. And in fact, it might be a really good idea if we never actually used the word informatics. I think that's a bit of a turn-off as well for students, because it sounds like something different. You want to try and do something that's sort of familiar. So the old chalk and talk way, boring lectures like this, blah, 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 when will he stop? Just sort of turn people off. They're well known to do that. So the old ways, chalk and talk, standing up in front of audiences, but the new way really is to develop it, to use interactive learning. And interactive learning takes, I think this is an obligatory way to teach almost anything these days, but it surely must be an obligatory way to teach informatics. Informatics is absolutely made for this kind of interactive learning. So I think it's well worth developing our e-learning skills. So, just one or two bits of background information. Again, just to emphasise, if anybody came in late, you're welcome to have these slides. So I'm not going to go through these papers in any sort of detail. And in case you feel you've missed the reference, I can give it to you. Give it to you later, either by email or off my file share, my slide share. Sorry, but a paper 2009 by Jensen et al. In nursing education practice looked at the technological enhancements in nursing education, informatics instruction, there's that word, personal response systems, clickers essentially, and human patient simulation. It's trying to bring all these things together. I think what I've learned from trying to read up about informatics over the last few months is that it's actually quite difficult to pin down, and all sorts of things get stuck onto it. So informatics and simulation, you know, at two ends of the spectrum it may seem, but in fact, they're sort of brought together here. But they said something very interesting in here. They were speaking about personal response systems, the clicker system that some people use in classrooms. But they said educational trends such as discovery learning, cooperative learning, etc., project-based instruction philosophies, are touted as new methods and improved instructional methods. That's been around for a little while. However, teachers, people like me, people like you, tend to continue to use traditional lecture formats like this one here. So, you know, students find this boring, and if they find it boring for, you know, run-of-the-mill subjects, I think they're going to find it very boring for informatics. So, you know, we need to, develop pedagogical approaches that are suited to informatics. Again, as I say, informatics is absolutely preferably suited to this kind of learning. So the another paper from the Journal of Professional Nursing, 2005. Some of these are quite old. I've got some very much more up to date papers. Picked this up, you know, best practices in web-based courses, and this was about informatics and the use of technology. So it's actually about the subject here by Billings et al. And they talked about the things that are needed to support learning in this sort of area. Clearly, and we'll look at that in a second, but clearly the use of technology is very important. People need to know how to use technology. The faculty need to be supported in using these technologies as well. I don't know what sort of e-learning platforms you use around the world. At Hull, we don't seem to use a mainstream one. We're moving from one system to another at the moment, from eBridge to something called Canvas. And it's very, even for somebody like myself who's trained in e-learning and very, very into it, finding it quite nerve-wracking, moving my material across and things are not working and such like. So faculty need a lot of support for this, students need support, and there need to be tangible outcomes. But what they focused on in the paper was the educational practices, and specifically on active learning. So again, this idea of active learning comes back into it, and ways of getting active learning into this sort of area. So we've got to appreciate that we're not trying to produce computer programmers. So we've got to appreciate what we are trying to do with nursing informatics. Not trying to produce programmers. We're not producing systems analysts. We're not producing computer scientists. And we're not actually producing information technologists. Some people may well go on and develop expertise in these areas, but when we're dealing with students, we're trying to produce a particular kind of nurse. We're trying to produce nurses who are comfortable looking for, finding, and interpreting information, basically. So we've got to be aware of what we're doing. So we're not trying to give them courses in how to program computers, how to set up databases, all these sort of things. I think we've got to get beyond that. These things are easily done by other people. These things exist. We've got to teach them how to look for the information, how to actually know when they've got good information, how to interpret it, and how to use it. And if we do that, in a sense, the job's done. We don't need to get too heavy about it. Now, there isn't a great deal of theory attached to nursing informatics, as far as I can see, certainly from my reading. But there is a paper here by Nancy Staggers and a whole load of other people from the States. There are several papers in this series, and this is what they did was they ran a Delphi study, a study of a consensus study amongst practitioners in informatics to find out what the competencies might be, and I'll come to the sort of list of competencies later, not from this paper but from another paper. And you know, they're deciding essentially that there were four levels of practice here. So again, I think there's not a great deal of theory here, but I do think if we're teaching informatics to nursing students, we need to know whatever level they're at, what we're trying to achieve with them, and what the vector is that's taking them from first base through to being really experienced users of informatics. So they proposed a sort of four-step model, and for some reason I forgot to attach the actual labels to this. I just realised when I was reading through this yesterday. But the first level, essentially, you might say first, second, third year, fourth year if you're lucky to have a fourth year in your nursing programme. We don't in the UK, or beyond that, master's level or whatever. But the first level would be using technology, making sure that people are actually familiar with how to use computers and social media and such like. We probably don't need to put a great deal of effort into that these days, because most students come with those skills, but you can't assume it in everyone. And I have to say that in the UK, the sort of demographics of nursing students is rather different from the other students. The average age of our students is in the high 20s, and very often people who've largely women, some who've left have children, come back again, and some of them may have missed some of this, so we need to make sure that they know how to use things and use them safely. Second level, sort of finding information, being able to retrieve information and to feel comfortable at using different sites. Third level, which could be sort of final year projects or such like, is presenting information. And I was recently in the Middle East, where they teach informatics in the university in Oman, where I was, and I asked them, what sort of things are you getting students to do in terms of presenting information? And the sort of things they do is they make up patient information leaflets, websites. They actually find information and put it into a way that's useful. And finally, again, probably not at the undergraduate level, you might be lucky, but using information for change, knowing how to make things better in a policy sense and in a practice sense, using information. So I think it's important that we've got some sort of direction as we go through these programmes, that we're not just teaching randomly. So back to some more research, again from the International Journal of Medical Informatics. This is an interesting, again, quite old survey, 2005, from 10 years ago, about nursing informatics knowledge and competencies, and it's a national survey from the United States, McNeil et al. And I thought this was quite interesting, actually. This is about half of the table. If you find the paper, it goes on down into the basement, the list of different things that constitute informatics. And again, just trying to emphasise, it's a really hard thing to pin down exactly what informatics is, and it seems like almost anything to do with electronics and online resources can be informatics. So I think it behoves somebody at some point really to make their mind up exactly what it is we're trying to get across to students. But this is at the undergraduate level, and it's quite interesting that only 50% of people report that they teach students how to access electronic resources. I would have thought it would have been much higher, and the percentages for all the rest are quite low. So, not everybody's teaching students everything about informatics, or they may be teaching them something else. I don't really know. The problem with these kinds of surveys, you only get the information back that people are willing to give you. But it's interesting that at the top of the undergraduate list, accessing electronic resources, computer-based patient records, ethical use of information systems, that kind of thing, and informatics competencies were sort of top of that league there. But here for postgraduate programs, or graduate programs as they call them in the USA, accessing resources at the top, but then ethical use of information, evidence-based practice, information systems and nursing practice, education, management and research, much more oriented towards actually using information for change and, you know, synthesising it and using it in ways that are useful. And again, also considering the ethical aspects, which we don't have time to go into today. But actually, quite, you know, not very high numbers of people being taught these things. You read the paper if you want. It's not very clear why the percentage is not very high. I guess some of it's because they assume that people have got some of these skills already. But the main point I was trying to get across there, again, that list goes way down there. It's an elephant of a subject. It's huge. It's very wide. It encompasses a lot of things. And I think there's not a clear view out there amongst informatics experts about exactly what informatics is. So, again, around 2004, most things seem to have been published about 10 years ago. So I've got a couple of very up-to-date papers to present at the end. Bakken et al., from the USA, looking at promoting patient safety through informatics education. What they're doing here is using informatics as a vehicle for content. So they're actually getting across two things. They're speaking about patient safety, which is very, very important, something that nursing students and nurses need to be very aware of, and using informatics as a way of as a vehicle for that content, but also helping the students to learn about informatics at the same time. And I've seen this, you know, I've seen this sort of approach work in my own teaching. I teach a completely online quantitative methods course at the University of Hull for master's students. It's not about informatics, but one of the subtexts of the learning outcomes is that people will become comfortable using social media and using online resources. And one of my students, one of my own PhD students, took the course this year, and she balked a little bit when I showed her that the assessment involved a straightforward essay. We've got to do those for some reason. But the other half of the assessment was setting up a blog about quantitative research. So actually them gathering together the information they've been learning in the programme, putting it in a blog to share with the other students, to share with me, which would be marked and awarded a percentage at the end of the programme. And she said to me, I didn't do another programme in the university simply because the assessment involved a blog. And I'm very afraid of online media. I've never used them before. I've never done a blog before. And I said, well, you've got to do this quantitative programme. One, because you're my PhD student and you'll do it, but also it's one of the competencies you need to get for the analysis part of your PhD. And I just marked the class while I was here, actually, in Taiwan. And she got the highest mark of all. You know, she produced the most amazing blog with bells and whistles, pictures, links, hypertext and such like. So, you know, in addition to learning about quantitative methods, as a result of sort of forcing her into doing that, she's learned something about using information, using social media. So this is not the most exciting diagram in the world, but it comes from the paper. But basically, you know, using informatics and using the issue of patient safety to show the students, you know, where the different aspects of information come from. There's information out there which is hospital level information which feeds into it. They've got their own information that they put in on the basis of patient safety incidents. There's a buffer somewhere which filters the information and puts it into a form that's usable, where it's stored and various reports come out. So, you know, there are ways in which clinical situations can be used to educate students and to show them how to make the best use of informatics. So, moving on from information to infographics. I'm a real firm believer that information doesn't have to be boring. And I hope I'm not boring you, but information doesn't have to be boring, and that we can actually use information in ways that really catch people's attention. This is moving a little bit beyond students. However, I think if we teach our students in this way and show them this kind of information, I think they they grasp the issue that we're trying to teach. They also grasp the scope and the possibilities and the potential for informatics. So moving from, you know, information to infographics, moving from all the raw binary data that we store and making it useful in a way that people can read, you know, and these sort of infographics say really, you know, these sort of catch my eye a great deal. They're very, very useful. That's one way of just showing what a day in the life of a nurse is like, how often they run, how often they walk, how often they're on their feet, how many shifts they work, and that kind of thing. Makes a good visual impact. And it's using real information. However, we don't have to be that sort of elaborate. I think very nice graphs like this, which make a real impact, can be a really good use of information. And I think this is the delivery end, the sharp end, as it were, of informatics. And these slides, you might recognise the slides. They come from Linda Aiken's RN forecast study, which was published in The Lancet 2 years ago. I was one of the reviewers for the paper, and I worked with Linda on a commission, and she gave me these are not published yet, so she gave me permission to use them. But a graph like this really makes an impression, doesn't it? You know, nurse staffing, patients per nurse, and the expected deaths. And the more nurses you have per patient, obviously the fewer deaths. I mean, it nearly goes down by 50%. We know that kind of thing. That's a graphic illustration of a nurse-sensitive outcome using informatics. Also, this is the more interesting one, I think. And again, AFAF talked about this yesterday, and someone talked about it in the opening ceremony. The expected deaths with higher percentages of graduate nurses or bachelor's level nurses on the wards. These figures are already out there in raw tables, but Linda's had these produced recently. Just exercise a bit of caution. The axis don't go to zero, so it's slightly expanded. But also, these are real data points. These are not extrapolations. It's real data. So again, I thought this was a really good way to use information and get it across in a way that is without doubt that graduate education is a valuable concept. That's okay. So I mean, other ways to use information: practicing doctors per 1,000 of a population. I happen to use the example of Taiwan here, just to sort of do it in an interesting way. How would you show a student in an interesting way where Taiwan was on the map? I mean, you're not actually on that map. I had to look up your own figures from your government statistics. But if you just kind of point and say we're around there somewhere, it doesn't make much of an impression, I don't think. But if you sort of take a map of Taiwan and stick it in like that, it shows you where it is. Oh, thank you. So you're actually quite low down the number of practicing doctors per 1,000 population, but there's not a great deal of evidence that having a high level of doctors practicing is the best thing for healthcare. So what about nurses per 1,000 population? Again, take a map and stick it in there. For some reason, you come out at the same level as Chile, but you're much nearer the average there, slightly below the UK. But I mean, these sort of things, again, just make a really good impression. You know, tables and figures and raw data just don't do the trick. Okay, moving on and getting near the end. Active infographics as well. They're very useful. These are the sort of things that we can do with computers these days. We can set up things where people can actually interact. You've got to be careful it doesn't frighten the life out of you, of course, and get a little bit too real. But I came across what I think is a prime example of the use of informatics by the WHO. And this is on their website. Some of you may have seen this. It's an interactive website. And what you can do is you can choose your condition, and you simply tick the box there, okay? And I would give my right arm to be able to do this kind of thing, but of course if I lost my right arm, I wouldn't be able to do it, but you know what I mean. It's a fantastic way. It's geographical information systems. And that, again, GIS, I think, is another way that we need to be moving with students. And I've got a PhD student working using GIS, and she's teaching me about it, and it's just fantastic. So what you can do with this is choose your condition, and if you don't want to get hepatitis A, well, you know where not not to go. You can choose hepatitis B, a little bit safer. You can travel a little bit more. Choose rabies. You know, there's a thankfully the UK is safe from rabies. And what else have we got? Yellow fever, covered nicely, coloured nicely in yellow. But I just these sort of things make a real impression. Very quickly, you can see and compare where it is. And the WHO produced quite a number of these kinds of bits of information. A really fantastic and, as I say, high-end use of informatics. And again, I think really good teaching resources for students. And of course, they can go off and do it by themselves. You don't have to stand and show it to them. You can point them to the web page. Right, somebody's going to wave something about 5 minutes to go. It's 5 minutes to go. I can see that on my watch, okay? Everybody's talking these days about big data, and I think that we can't move beyond it. We think we've really got to start teaching our students about big data. I'm sure everybody here has heard the expression big data. And big data isn't about size of data. It does tend to give you access to terabytes of information. But big data is about pulling things together. And again, you know, a lot of personal information. You can pull information from smartphones, what people buy, where they shop, and all the rest of it. And on the ethical side, just as a bit of an aside, I spoke to an expert in big data recently, and he said all you need about any person, you don't need to know the name or anything, all you need is any three bits of information about them, and you can almost locate them. Okay, any three bits of information. And that's using big data, because everything seems to be linked these days. But I think we need to teach our students about the potential for big data, because it's got huge potential for health promotion, for example. And people have been using Facebook and health figures to tie together how to get messages across, what people respond to, what they pass on, and that kind of thing. And at the moment, it requires experts to do big data analysis. I can't do it. I doubt there are many people in the room who can do it. It requires experts to write algorithms which burrow into each of these areas and pull them together. I shouldn't give predictions, but I think in 5 years' time, on our iPhones, we'll have an app that can actually do big data analysis for us. You know, we just need to say we want information from Facebook, information from the health survey for Taiwan, something else, and it'll pull it together. And I think students will be beginning to present projects using big data, quite sure of it. So very recently, in the Journal of Nursing Scholarship, 2015, Nursing Needs Big Data and Big Data Needs Nursing, Brennan and Bakken. Very, very good article. If you don't know about big data and its potential, well worth reading that. And as far as I know, that's the first paper that I've seen on big data within nursing. And again, big data is not a fishing trip into databases. We need, to appreciate that we can use theory to drill in. You know, the usual way of building up theory is data up to what we know, but actually big data requires a theoretical perspective, a proper research question, to drill into what is already there. So it's not just fishing about amongst large data groups. Finally, the latest thing, big common data elements. I'm sure that people are familiar with something around this area. For years within, and this is right back to informatics and health informatics in particular, we've been trying to get ways of classifying diseases and patients and what happens to people in ways that everybody understands across the world. And of course, everybody develops their own system and it doesn't really work. And it's been fairly unsuccessful so far. I think it's appreciated that we need to have common data elements, probably within geographical locations at the very least. But again, common data elements, which are simply ways of operationalizing and identifying variables in ways that are exactly the same every time they're recorded across every study. So we don't record, for example, blood pressure in millimeters of mercury in one study and kilopascals in another. But, you know, we that's a very facile example, but we decide, you know, universally what we're going to do. So it's much more useful for health planning, health information, health informatics, and of course for research. So again, Redeker et al. These tend to be huge multi-author papers, as you can see. Redeker et al. Again in the Journal of Nursing Scholarship, very recently, the same issue as the big data paper, because it was an issue on information, advancing symptom science through the use of common data elements. And again, what they were trying to get across here was that we need to teach our colleagues and we need to teach students about this, because they're the people who will be putting information in the near future. And the absolute value of doing it the same every time. We don't do that at the moment. I know we don't. So, there's always a point in every talk when people are sort of falling asleep and somebody says, and in summary, and everybody wakens up again and says, thank God, he's nearly finished, I can listen now to see what he's actually going to say. So, in summary. In conclusion also works very nicely too. When you're doing an after-dinner speech, say, in conclusion, everybody wakens up. I think, frankly, despite the fact that I've been talking about informatics, I think it's probably a piece of jargon. It's a very hard area to define, and maybe we should stop using the word informatics, with no insult to North American colleagues. It is a very North American concept, but I'd really like to know exactly what it is. But we can't get away from the use of information. Our students are natural users of information, and we should teach them as if we know that. We shouldn't patronise them. I think we should meet them where they are with social media and whatever they're doing and say, look, this can be used for information exchange, knowledge building, database building, but know how to use it properly. Our students are also natural generators of information. That's the thing about Web 2 and social media. It's actually putting information up there. And students are very good at putting information up there. I've got lots of student followers on Twitter, and I follow quite a few back, and they're fantastic at finding things and putting things up there, and you can actually pull it off. And they're not naive in this respect at all. So we should teach them. We should know that, but we should teach them how to do it better. I think that's the thing that is the responsibility of us as academics. So there's my email for anybody who wants to insult me or inquire about things. My Twitter handle, if you want to follow me on Twitter. My ORCID, it's not come up very clearly, my ORCID number, my research number, that's another bit of social networking, big data, informatics, is ORCID numbers, pulling all your online thing research profile together. And what I'd like to say is thank you very much. Shishi, I'm trying to think of shukran and arigato.
Thank you so much.
Professor Watson, thank you.